This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. The role of solitude in deepening self-knowledge. How quiet time alone builds the self-awareness that pressure strips away. In short, solitude deepens self-awareness not through passive rest, but through structured reflection that reveals your patterns before pressure exposes them for you. Most people only discover their emotional triggers after the damage is done. Solitude lets you map them first. Undirected quiet drifts into rumination. Structured reflection turns it into genuine self-knowledge. Five frameworks below give you a method to reach for, not just time to sit with. Definition: solitude self-awareness is the practice of using deliberate, uninterrupted time alone to examine your emotional patterns, values, and reactive tendencies. It is the discipline of turning inward with a clear purpose so that the insights you gain hold when noise and pressure return. Twice in my life I have made a significant decision under pressure and been completely convinced I was acting from my values. Both times, if I'm honest, I was acting from fear I had never examined. I did not know the difference between the two until years later, when I finally began spending time alone with something harder than silent structured questions I could not talk my way around. That is what solitude does for self-awareness. It does not flatter you. It does not confirm your story. It surfaces what you have been too busy or too proud to notice. The problem is that most people treat solitude as passive recovery, something to fall into when you're exhausted rather than something you practice deliberately. Without structure, quiet time alone drifts into mental noise, replaying conversations, rehearsing arguments, building defenses. That is not self-awareness. That is rumination wearing a contemplative mask. Real self-knowledge requires a framework, something to direct your attention so the quiet has a purpose. The five frameworks below are tools I have tested across decades of working with people who needed to understand themselves better under pressure. Each one serves a different moment. Together, they give you a system for using solitude to build the kind of self-awareness that does not collapse the moment someone challenges you or a meeting goes sideways. Why unstructured quiet often fails the self-aware person. Silence alone is not enough. I have watched intelligent, committed people carve out time for reflection and come away knowing less about themselves than when they started because they sat in the quiet without any direction. The mind, left unguided, gravitates toward its strongest grooves: resentment, planning, self-justification. Those are not self-awareness. They are habits wearing its clothing. Structure is not the enemy of depth. A well-chosen prompt or a simple framework gives your reflection something to push against, and it is in that resistance that genuine insight appears. If you want solitude to deepen your self-knowledge, you need to show up with a tool, not just a willingness to sit still. If you have ever noticed that you respond defensively to certain kinds of feedback before you can catch yourself, or that your leadership voice is driven more by anxiety than intention, those patterns are exactly what structured solitude is designed to surface before someone else has to point them out. Five frameworks for deepening self-knowledge in solitude. Framework 1. The trigger map. What it is: a structured method for identifying the specific situations, phrases, tones, and dynamics that consistently produce an emotional reaction in you before you've consciously decided to react. What it is designed for: building awareness of your emotional flashpoints, the moments where your rational self goes offline and a faster, older response takes over. How it works. Number 1. Recall a recent reactive moment. Choose a moment in the past week when you felt a strong emotional response: frustration, defensiveness, anxiety, a sudden desire to withdraw. You do not need the most dramatic example. A minor irritation will do. Number 2. Describe the trigger in the most specific terms possible. Not my colleague was disrespectful, but she interrupted me 3 times while I was presenting and then asked a question that implied I had not prepared. Specificity is everything here. Number 3. Name the emotion without softening it. Annoyed and threatened are different things. Choose the word that costs you something to admit. Number 4. Trace the trigger backward. Ask, where have I felt this before? Is there a theme across multiple situations where this same reaction appears? Number 5. Write 1 sentence about what the trigger tells you about what you value or fear. That sentence is the insight. When to use it. After any situation where your response surprised you, or where you later regretted how you reacted, when not to use it. Do not use this framework as a tool for assigning blame to others. If your notes are mostly about what other people did wrong, you've left self-awareness behind and entered justification. Worked example. A project manager found herself repeatedly shutting down in meetings when her ideas were questioned publicly. Her trigger map eventually produced this sentence. I am afraid that being wrong in front of others proves I do not belong in the role. That single sentence changed how she prepared for meetings and how she interpreted challenge from colleagues. Here is the truth of it. A trigger map is uncomfortable to build. You are not looking for excuses. You are looking for patterns. The discomfort is how you know you're doing it right. Framework 2. The values audit. What it is. A periodic, structured examination of the gap between the values you claim to hold and the choices you actually make under pressure. What it is designed for. Revealing the distance between your stated identity and your lived behaviour, which is precisely where self-deception hides. How it works. Number 1. List 3 values you believe guide your professional behaviour. Common examples: honesty, courage, reliability, fairness. Number 2. Choose one value and recall 3 recent decisions or conversations that involved it. Not hypothetical situations. Real, recent ones. Number 3. For each, ask, did my actual behaviour reflect this value? Or did I compromise it? Be specific about what you did, not what you intended. Number 4. If there was a gap, name the pressure that caused it. Time, fear of conflict, desire for approval, self-protection. These are not failures. They are information. Number 5. Write one thing you would do differently next time to honour the value under that specific pressure. When to use it. Monthly or after a decision that left you feeling vaguely unsettled without knowing why. That unsettled feeling is almost always a values gap signalling itself. When not to use it. Do not use this as a performance review on yourself. The goal is clarity, not punishment. If the audit becomes self-flagellation, it will stop producing insight and start producing avoidance. Worked example. A senior manager who prized honesty realized through this audit that he consistently softened difficult feedback to avoid discomfort and then told himself he'd been tactful. The audit showed him the difference between tact and avoidance. That distinction directly shaped how he gave feedback going forward. If you want to understand the mechanics of that better, the confidence-competence loop is worth examining alongside this framework. This much I know for certain: the values you defend most loudly in public are often the ones you compromise most quietly in private. The audit finds them. Framework 3. The emotional weather log. What it is. A brief, daily written record of your emotional state at consistent points in the day, tracked over 2 to 4 weeks to reveal patterns you'd never notice in single moments. What it is designed for. Building the habit of naming your internal state accurately and frequently, which is the foundation of emotional self-monitoring. How it works. Number 1. Set 2 fixed points in your day for a brief check-in. Morning before work begins, and immediately after your most demanding part of the working day. Number 2. Rate your emotional state on 3 dimensions: energy low to high, clarity foggy to sharp, and tension calm to tight. Use a simple 1-5 scale for each. Number 3. Write one sentence about the dominant feeling present. Not a judgment, a description. Impatient with the morning is useful. Bad today is not. Number 4. After 2 weeks, read the log back. Look for patterns: particular days, particular types of interactions, particular people or tasks that consistently shift your state in one direction. Number 5. Identify one pattern that has a clear cause you can act on. When to use it. As a starting practice for anyone new to self-reflection, or during a period of sustained pressure, when you notice your room actions becoming less predictable. When not to use it. Do not use this as a substitute for deeper reflection. The weather log tracks surface conditions. It tells you something is happening. The other frameworks help you understand what and why. Worked example. A team leader who felt chronically overwhelmed used this log for 3 weeks and discovered that her tension peaked specifically on the mornings following unresolved conversations from the day before. The insight was not I'm stressed at work. It was I carry unfinished relational business overnight, and it costs me the next morning. That is a different problem with a different solution. The weather log teaches you to observe yourself without immediately evaluating what you find. That discipline alone is worth 3 months of your time. Framework 4. The perspective reversal practice. What it is. A structured solitude exercise in which you deliberately reconstruct a recent difficult interaction from the other person's point of view, with a specific goal of identifying your own blind spots. What it is designed for. expanding self-awareness beyond your own internal experience to include how your behavior lands on others, which is territory most people never enter honestly, how it works. Number one, choose a recent interaction that did not go as you hoped. A difficult conversation, a tense exchange, a moment of misalignment with a colleague or team member. Number two, write a brief account of the interaction from your own point of view. One paragraph. Include what you felt and what you wanted. Number three, set that account aside and write the interaction again, this time entirely from the other person's perspective. What did they see? What did they feel? What were they likely trying to accomplish? Write it as generously as you can. Number four, compare the two accounts. Identify one thing the second account reveals about your behavior that the first account missed entirely. Number five, ask if this is true. What does it suggest I need to change or acknowledge? When to use it? After interpersonal friction, particularly when your first instinct is that the other person was entirely at fault. When not to use it? This framework requires honest effort. If you write the second account as a caricature that confirms your original position, you will waste your time and leave more defended than you started. Worked example. A manager convinced that a team member was simply resistant to feedback used this exercise and realized that every piece of feedback he delivered came with an implied threat to the person's competence. The second account was uncomfortable to write. It was also accurate. Understanding how the core framework helps people stay grounded during tense workplace conversations becomes much more useful once you know your own role in creating the tension. Let me tell you something I learned the hard way. The most important thing this exercise ever showed me was not the other person's perspective. It was how rarely I had considered it. Framework 5. The Pattern Interrupt Journal. What it is. A structured writing practice focused specifically on identifying the recurring story you tell yourself and testing whether that story serves you or limits you. What it is designed for. Exposing the narrative patterns that drive self-awareness blind spots, the internal stories that feel like facts, but are, in truth, interpretations built from old experience. How it works. Number one. Identify a recurring frustration or theme in your professional life. Something that seems to follow you from role to role, team to team. Number two. Write the story you tell yourself about why it keeps happening. Be specific. Include the characters, the dynamic, and the conclusion you have drawn. Number three, challenge every noun in that story. If you wrote people never respect my boundaries, ask which people, specifically, in which situations, have there been exceptions? Number four, identify the oldest version of this story you can remember. When did you first decide this was true? That origin is usually worth knowing. Number five, write an alternative interpretation of the same recurring pattern. Not a positive spin, a genuinely different reading of the same events. When to use it. When you notice yourself saying this always happens to me, or people like that always those generalizations are the signal. When not to use it. Do not attempt this framework when you are emotionally flooded. Sit with the emotional weather log first. Wait for clarity. Then use the pattern interrupt journal when your mind can hold the complexity. Worked example. A professional who believed she was always passed over for leadership roles used this framework and traced the story back to a specific manager who had dismissed her publicly early in her career. The story had calcified into a belief. Once she could see it as a story rather than a fact, she could examine the actual evidence in front of her, including the confidence-competence loop, shapes why some leaders develop a stronger voice faster than others. The evidence was more mixed than her story allowed. Old stories are roots. Some of them anchor you. Some of them hold you down. You cannot tell the difference until you examine them directly. Choosing the right framework for the moment. Not every framework fits every situation. Here is a practical guide for selecting the one you need. Your situation start with, you have acted badly and want to understand why framework 1. Trigger map, you feel vaguely out of alignment with yourself framework 2. Values audit, your emotions feel unpredictable or hard to name framework 3. Emotional weather log, a relationship where interaction went wrong framework 4. Perspective reversal, the same problem keeps appearing in different forms framework 5. Pattern interrupt journal, as a general rule, start with the emotional weather log if you are new to self-reflection. It builds the basic vocabulary of your inner states without requiring deep psychological excavation. Once you can name your states consistently, the trigger map and values audit become far more productive, because you have the language to use them. For deeper relational work, the perspective reversal practice is indispensable, particularly for leaders. If you want to understand why some managers handle pressure better than others, the Confidence Competence Loop offers a compelling explanation that pairs directly with what this practice surfaces. The Pattern Interrupt Journal is for sustained work, not crisis. Return to it seasonally rather than weekly. Where people go wrong with these frameworks. Three errors show up consistently when people begin using the structured self-reflection. The mistake: treating reflection as self-criticism. Why it happens. Many people retort that examining their failures was the same as berating themselves for them. What to do instead? Keep the tone of your reflection neutral and curious. You are a researcher studying a subject, not a judge issuing a verdict. The mistake: using the frameworks to understand other people rather than themselves. Why it happens? It is far more comfortable to notice someone else's patterns than your own. What to do instead? When your reflection drifts toward analysing others, bring it back with a question. What does my reaction to this tell me about me? The mistake: starting with the most demanding framework first and abandoning the practice when it becomes overwhelming. Why it happens? Enthusiasm and impatience. What to do instead? Begin with 10 minutes of the emotional weather log, consistently, for 2 weeks. Build the habit before you build the depth. When feedback triggers a defensive reaction, it is often because your self-awareness practice has not yet mapped the territory that the feedback touches. The core framework for staying calm: when feedback triggers defensiveness, works best when you already know your own triggers. Solitude builds that map in advance. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling Books 8 Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Building fluency with these frameworks over time. The goal is not to use all five frameworks at once. That is a recipe for abandonment. In the first month, choose one framework and practice it 4 times per week for 10 to 15 minutes. Consistency matters far more than duration. By the end of the month, you'll have generated enough material to notice patterns you had no awareness of before. In the second month, add a second framework, one that complements the first. The trigger map and the values audit work well together. The emotional weather log and the pattern interrupt journal are a natural pair. By month 3, the frameworks will have become a natural part of how you process experience. You will begin using them informally, in the gaps of the day, without needing to sit down formally with a notebook. For leaders who want to take this further, the Connect method for regulating emotion without losing vocal authority is a strong complement to everything built through solitary reflection. Self-awareness without application stays self-indulgent. The goal is to carry what you learn in solitude into the room with you. What do you carry out of the quiet? The person who reflects consistently is not the person who has no emotional reactions. They have just as many. What they have, that others lack, is a few seconds of recognition before the reaction takes over the moment where they see what is happening in themselves and choose their response rather than default to it. That gap between trigger and response is what solitude builds. It is not dramatic. It is not permanent. It has to be earned again and again, through practice that is mostly unglamorous and occasionally uncomfortable. But it is the most valuable professional skill I know, and it costs nothing except the willingness to sit with yourself long enough to be honest. Solitude self-awareness is not a retreat from the world. It is the preparation for returning to it more clearly than you left. Frequently asked questions. What is solitude self-awareness, and why does it matter? Solitude self-awareness is the practice of using deliberate, uninterrupted time alone to examine your emotional patterns, reactions, and values, without outside noise competing for attention. It matters because most people only understand themselves in relation to others, which leaves the deeper picture incomplete. How do you use solitude to build genuine self-knowledge? You build genuine self-knowledge through solitude by pairing quiet time with a structured method, a reflection prompt, a pattern log, or a values audit. Undirected silence often drifts into rumination. Structure gives the quiet a purpose and turns passive rest into active self-examination. How long should solitude practice take to improve self-awareness? Even 10 to 15 minutes of structured reflection, practiced 4 to 5 times per week, produces measurable gains in self-awareness within a month. The consistency matters far more than the duration. Short, regular sessions outperform occasional long retreats for most people in busy professional lives. What is the difference between solitude and loneliness in self-awareness work? Solitude is chosen and purposeful. Loneliness is the feeling of unwanted disconnection. In self-awareness practice, solitude is a tool you reach for deliberately. Loneliness is a signal worth examining, but it is not the same state. Confusing the two causes people to avoid the quiet they actually need. Can solitude self-awareness practices help with emotional triggers at work? Yes, when you use solitude to map your emotional triggers in advance, you recognize them faster in the moment and respond with more intention. Leaders who reflect on patterns before pressure arrives consistently handle tense situations better than those who only debrief after the fact. What stops most people from using solitude for self-reflection? Two things stop most people: discomfort with silence and the absence of structure. Sitting alone without a clear purpose quickly feels unproductive. Many people also confuse self-reflection with self-criticism and avoid both. A simple framework and a short-time commitment removes both barriers immediately. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling books 8 Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.